observing how deftly her brother-in-law smoothed Pop's ruffled feathers. "Danny is the literal best," Mercy said. "He's nice and all, but people who leave globs of toothpaste in the sink are barred from literal bestdom. You, on the other hand, really are the literal best. Which is why I know you're going to put on your big girl pants tonight so that we can discuss Cunningham's offer." "Yes, absolutely," Mercy agreed. But as she rose from her seat to help Zeddy carry in the dinner dishes, Lillian put a hand on her arm to stop her. "Don't think I'm letting you escape without talking about a certain Tanrian Marshall, little miss, he's pure evil. I saw you cutting a rug at the party." In her mind, she could hear Hart's laughter-laced, "Fuck!" She glanced at Pop, who was too busy holding forth on the finer qualities of the left and right drivers of Bouchong's sea polo team to have heard Lil. "Later," she hissed, and went to help Zeddy. She wasn't ready to talk about what was happening between her and Hart, as if putting it into words would make it slip between her fingers like water. Besides, she had other, more pressing issues to focus on tonight. After Pop led them through prayers of thanks to the three mothers, the three fathers, and the hearth, Mercy cleared her throat.
"I have some things I need to say."
She waited until she had everyone's attention before she continued, her knees bobbing nervously under the table.
"First of all, I'm sorry that I've been short-tempered with everyone. Zeddy, I haven't been supportive of your career choices, and that's not fair of me. You should follow your bliss, especially if it results in me getting to eat chocolate croissants and lobster tails."
"Not together, though," he joked, but a relieved smile spread across his face.
"Lil and Danny, I had no right to go spilling your news."
Mercy decided to take a page from Hart's book and added,
"I was an ass."
"It's okay," Danny said. At the same moment, his wife answered,
"You were a total ass, but I love you anyway. And Pop, I'm sorry that I haven't been able to put into words what I've been needing to say all along. So, here it goes. You've always thought that Birdsall and Son is a burden to me, that it's stopping me from living my life. You've all been telling me that. But what you don't seem to understand is that Birdsall and Son is my life. I admit that I didn't see myself running the office forever, but ever since we switched places, Pop, I've loved going to work every day. I want to be an undertaker, and if we sell the business, I'm going to have to stop doing the job I love. So that's why I've been so crabby about it."
"Muffin," Pop began, but Mercy held up a hand.
If she didn't make it through this speech now, she might never again muster the courage. "I'm not saying that any of you need to give up something for me. Lillian and Danny, you have every right to stop traveling and settle down to raise your family. Zeddy, I want you to cook and bake and do the things that make you happy. Pop, you have earned the right to retire and sit around reading those Arvonian adventure novels you enjoy so much. We're a family, and I love you, which is why I think you should know what's in my heart, even though I know we're probably going to have to sell the business. That's all."
Mercy reached for her glass and took a fortifying gulp of wine, swallowing the giant lump in her throat along with it.
"Aw, Merce," Zeddy said, with a soft sympathy that made the lump return with a vengeance. "Don't you dare make me cry."
Pop reached across the table to put his big hand on Mercy's.
"I've always felt terrible about how much you've had to take on, and from such a young age. I thought you wanted to move on at some point." "Well, I don't," said Mercy, her voice going alarmingly wobbly. "But I will if I have to."
Lillian put both hands on the table like the head shareholder at a business meeting.
"Stop being so drippy, everyone. We can fix this, can't we? Merce, what if I ran the office so you could build the boats?"
Mercy was dabbing her eyes with her napkin, but stopped when Lil's words sank in.
"Do you want to run the office?
Why not? It's a million times better than teaching math to a bunch of little shits again. Plus, I'd get to work with you every day, which would be great. And I'd bet all the beer tokens of the Red Wing Islands that my darling husband would much rather stay home with the baby than work some office job every day."
Danny sat up straight and unfurled a wide grin.
"Works for me."
"There, problem solved.
So now all we need is a new delivery driver, and Birdsall and Son stays in business. Birdsall and daughter? What are we calling this joint now?
Mercy and Pop glanced at each other across the table.
Did you tell them? She asked him.
No, I thought you did.
Lil looked from Pop to Mercy.
Tell us what?
It's not that simple. Cunningham forged an exclusive deal with Afton Lumber. We're going to have to find another vendor, which means the delivery costs are going to go through the roof. I don't think we can absorb the deficit and remain solvent for long.
Lillian slapped the table in outrage.
Is that legal? Can we afford a lawyer if it isn't?
Lawyer schmoyer, Zeddy piped in. If you ask me, there's something shady going on that has nothing to do with boring-ass lumber prices. Obviously, you're doing something that's making Cunningham nervous, Mercy. So find out what it is and stick it to the man.
Mercy, Lillian, Danny, and Pop stared at Zeddy in stunned silence.
What? He said, defensive.
Lillian tilted her head, considering him.
That was smart. What in the salt sea, Z?
He picked up a stray pea from his plate and, using his spoon as a catapult, fired it at his sister. Ignoring them, Pop rose from his seat.
Then it's settled. I'm not selling to Cunningham. We'll figure out a way to keep our doors open.
He took his wine glass and held it up.
To Mercy's future. To Mercy's future, everyone else agreed.
Lil patted Mercy's arm and said,
Don't you worry. We're going to make this work.
Mercy burst into tears of gratitude. And Lil was so caught up in strategizing ways to keep Birdsall and Son in business that she forgot to ask Mercy about that dance with Hart Ralston. It was the shushing of sandpaper that lured Roy into the boatworks the following afternoon shortly before closing. Mercy hadn't realized that he had crept in until he spoke up, pulling her out of her thoughts. A tug of war between Hart Ralston and Curtis Cunningham, with an occasional digression to her silent pen pal, as she pressed the fairing plank to the frame to make sure it was flush.
She's a beaut.
Thanks, said Mercy, flushing with pride. But then she watched him in consternation as he picked up the tools from the pegboard that mirrored her own.
What are you doing?
Helping out?
But
I know what the doctor said. It won't hurt my heart to fair a frame with my daughter.
Mercy watched him as he got to work, his hands knowing what to do without his having to think about it. Here in the boatworks, surrounded by wood and tools and the ceremonial accoutrements for the dead, he had the self-assurance she had come to miss dearly over the past year. She knew that a bit of sanding wouldn't overly tax him, so she got to work on the starboard side across from him, and they settled into a companionable rhythm.
You were always a natural at this. Took to it like a fish to water, he said after a while. The Birdsalls have been undertakers in Bouchong since long before Tanria opened. My pop taught me the ropes from the moment I could hold a hammer upright. He pinned his hopes for the future on me the way his father had pinned his hopes on him, but I never felt pressured or trapped. I wanted to do this. All these years, I've been pinning my hopes on poor Zeddy when I should have seen it was you all along.
I'm a girl, Pop. I couldn't see myself as an undertaker until a few months ago. Why should you? Why should anyone?
I should have seen it. Frankly, I'm ashamed of myself.
Oh, Pop. She set her hand on the keel, as if it were her father's beating heart.
You say I'm a girl, but the gods know you never had much of a chance to be anything other than a full-grown woman. And what a remarkable woman you are. The three fathers and the unknown god will surely be honored to welcome you into the Brotherhood of Undertakers.
Siblinghood? She suggested, making a joke so she wouldn't start bawling.
Siblinghood, Roy agreed,
setting his big hand on top of his daughter's. Mercy's whole body warmed with her father's approval.
What can I say?
I learned from the best. He patted her hand, then put his sander away.
We'll have to figure out what to call this place once you take over. You think on that. In the meantime, I'm heading home to see what the chef has cooking.
Probably something Dr. Galdames said you can't eat. He came over to the starboard side to kiss her cheek.
Probably.
Chapter 27. The 6 days following Hart's exit from Mercy's apartment comprised a form of torture designed specifically for a besotted marshal who had to patrol Sector W-20 in the company of an apprentice who talked incessantly of Zeddy this and Zeddy that and, "Are you sure there are no dragons in Tanria, sir?" All Hart could think about was Mercy, and how much he wanted to be in her bed, and how much he did not want to be stuck in Tanria, hiding his constant boner from Duckers. It came as a relief when the flare went up late Wisdom's Day afternoon. At least now he had something to do other than miss Mercy. His relief evaporated when he and Duckers galloped onto the scene. The flare brought them to the Ash Valley Heartnut Grove, where a handful of sap-tappers were either scrambling up heartnut trees or firing off pistol crossbows from behind the trunks to fend off 3 drudges on the attack. Multiple drudges working in tandem was strange enough, but Hart also spied 2 more souls floating in the grove, as if they were standing by for a chance to infect a dead body. A drudge had already killed one of the sap-tappers and knelt on the corpse as if it had slain the man for one of these lost souls. "Oh, fuck, sir," said Duckers, gaping at the murdered man. "I've got it. You take the one on the right." Hart didn't wait to make sure Duckers followed his order. He knew his apprentice well enough by now to trust him. He urged his equimaris toward the drudge crouched over the slain man, his mount's webbed feet slapping the earth as he drew the machete from the holster strapped to his back. "Move," he shouted at a pair of sap-tappers who were trying to help their fallen comrade when it was far too late for that. They dodged out of the way in time for Hart to swing in and lop off the drudge's head. He circled around and slid off the equimaris to slice through the creature's abdomen. He missed the appendix, so he moved the machete to his left hand, drew his rapier with his right, and lunged, hitting the mark this time. The soul flew free, but one of the glowing spirit lights, waiting in the wings, darted in to take up residence in the newly slaughtered man. Hart was about to stab the slain sap-tapper in the appendix when Duckers yelled, "Look out, sir!" Hart sensed the 3rd drudge at his back and rolled out of the way as his apprentice came barreling in, shooting his pistol crossbow and taking out the drudge with 1 shot. Before Hart could commend Duckers, the newly animated corpse grabbed Hart's ankle. Hart hacked off its hand with a machete, got to his feet, and dispatched the drudge with his rapier. He sheathed the machete, but kept the rapier handy as he watched the lost souls, 5 in total, drift away from the grove. The rescued sap-tappers timidly approached the marshals, but Hart was more concerned about Duckers, who frowned down at the man who had been killed and reanimated and killed again. Hart cupped the back of his apprentice's head, something his grandfather did to him when he was sad or scared as a child. "You all right?"
"Yeah, it's depressing, though."
"It is. I'd be worried about you if you didn't think it was depressing."
"Thanks, sir."
Hart rubbed the back of Duckers's head before sending him to fetch sailcloth from his pack, so that they could cover the body of the sap-tapper while Hart interviewed the witnesses. Once the marshals had everything they needed for the report, they sent the workers home to the Ash Valley Barracks and got to work wrapping the remains. "We need to enter you in some sharpshooting competitions," Hart told Duckers as he examined the drudge his apprentice had shot.
"Oh yeah? What kind of money can you make off that sort of thing?"
"Depends. What's my cut?"
0.1%.
"And after all I've done for you."
Duckers laughed. Hart had grown fond of making him burst out laughing like that. He nodded toward the cadaver the kid was wrapping. "Where's that one headed?"
"No tag. Yours?"
"Kalis."
"Mm-hmm."
Hart could hear the hopefulness in Duckers' voice. Birdsall and Son was one of the only drop-off sites for indigents. But surely the deceased employee of the Ash Valley Heartnut Grove would have a prepaid funeral package, so he decided not to get his own hopes up yet.
"This one's keyless too, sir, in case you were wondering,"
Duckers offered a few minutes later, once he had started working on the 3rd drudge. That left Hart with the remains of the man who had been killed today.
as Hart suspected, he had a tag. "This one's going to Faber and Sons," he told Duckers, doing a creditable job masking his disappointment. "Faber's is in Zinedale, by the North Station, and there's a Cunningham branch in the next town over where we can drop off the indigents." Duckers gave him a sad puppy face. "What?
Can we please, 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 please take the keyless bodies to Birdsall and Son?"
Hart was about to say no, but then he thought, fuck it. Professionalism is for people who are not in love with Mercy Birdsall. What had he been thinking? Of course he was going to use this shameless opportunity to see Mercy again. But since he was not above messing with Duckers, he crossed his arms and said, "That's out of the way. I'll make your cut of my sharpshooting victories 5%. Hart had no intention of ever letting his apprentice wind up in a sharpshooting contest, but he played along, shaking his head. 10, Duckers offered. 20.
"You drive a hard bargain, sir."
Duckers held out his hand, and Hart pretended that he was being magnanimous when he shook it. "Birdsall and Son it is," he said with a fake sigh. After they dropped off the departed Hartnut Saptapper at Faber and Sons, Hart expected Duckers to spend the drive to eternity bouncing like a kid with a new rubber ball on his side of the bench. Hart's interior was certainly jumping up and down in excitement at the prospect of seeing Mercy again. Instead, Duckers tapped his fingers on the window frame in a manner that spoke of anxiety rather than joy. "Out with it," Hart said. "What's eating you?"
"I still say that standing up Mercy was a shitty thing to do, and I think you should come clean."
Duckers closed his mouth and shrank away, as if he were awaiting a tongue lashing. Hart would have laughed, except the fact that his apprentice expected sharp words from him made him feel like an asshole. "I went to the Little Wren Cafe that night after you left," he admitted. Duckers sat up straight.
"You did?"
"Yep."
"And?"
Hart shrugged.
"Are you serious? Dang, you are a steel trap. Come on, what did she say?"
"Self-serving, prickly, glowering nightmare of a man." Her words had cut Hart to the quick that night. But a week later, she had kissed the corner of his mouth and asked him to come upstairs. Nothing that wasn't true. The point is, it's sorted out, so you don't need to worry about it anymore.
"But you're going to be nice to her when we see her?"
"Of course." Duckers' silence made Hart turn his eyes away from the road long enough to see his apprentice's cynical expression. He nearly drew blood biting his cheek so he wouldn't laugh. "I'll be good," he promised. He could not wait to be good to Mercy. It did not occur to him to be nervous until he backed the duck up to the Birdsall and Son loading dock shortly before closing. He'd been so focused on how much he missed Mercy that he'd failed to consider that she might not be as invested in their blossoming relationship as he was.
"Don't we usually check in up front?"
Duckers asked as he rang the dock bell. Hart did usually go to the lobby first, but this time, he was here to see Mercy, not her dog, although he'd be happy to see Leonard too. "This is faster," he said. And then the gate went up, and there was Mercy, dressed in a cotton blouse and a pair of denim dungarees that rendered her curves positively delicious. Her luscious bottom lip fell open in surprise, and Hart needed to get rid of his apprentice as soon as possible so that he could suck that lip into his mouth, if Mercy wanted him to suck on her bottom lip.
"Hi,"
he coughed, his inner critic adding, "Wow," setting her heart aflutter with that opening.
"Hello?"
Mercy put a hand to her flushing cheek, which was adorable.
"We have 3 keyless bodies to drop off,"
Duckers chimed in, helpfully clueless.
3? My goodness.
Mercy realized she was touching her cheek and removed her hand, which was also adorable.
Right, bring them in. "Is Zeddy around?"
Duckers asked, as Hart and Mercy stole glances at each other throughout the process of stowing the bodies on the lift in the boatworks.
"He's at the house. He doesn't start at Prosperina's until next week. I'm sure he'll be thrilled to see you."
"You go on," Hart told him. "I'll finish up here."
"Can I take the duck?"
"Sure."
Duckers could drive it into a ditch tonight for all Hart cared. He wanted his apprentice out of his hair.
Sweet!
Duckers pointed a finger at his face.
Be nice.
I'll do my best. Mercy walked Duckers to the dock with Hart trailing a few steps behind, and they both watched him get into the auto dock and pull away. Sorry to show up announced, Hart said, his pulse ratcheting up as Mercy pulled down the gate. I hope this is a... The second the gate clanged shut, Mercy grabbed him by his vest and pulled him into a hot, wet kiss that hummed through his body like a plucked guitar string. Okay, he finished breathlessly when she pulled away.
I suppose it's all right.
He tried to keep his smile from splitting his face open as she wiped her lipstick off his mouth with her thumb. Her thumb by his mouth. He grabbed hold of it with his teeth. Oh my, she breathed. And then she pulled her thumb free, and her mouth was on his again. His hands traveled downward to her ass, pulling her into his hard need, and he moved with her gyrations, their rhythm heated and sinuous. They paused long enough for Mercy to lock up, and then they were a tangle of limbs, their kissing frenetic, almost desperate. Once again, they succeeded in making it up the stairs, but not much farther. Hart had Mercy mostly undressed by the time they stumbled into her apartment. In a fit of horny illogic, she shut Leonard in her bedroom, at which point Hart pressed her against the closed door, tasting first her mouth, then every other part of her he had managed to unclothe, until Mercy could barely stay standing. She pushed him to the settee and straddled him.
Why are you still dressed?
She demanded, exasperated, as she unbuttoned and unzipped his dungarees. Priorities. He snaked his hand beneath him to pull the wallet out of his pocket and fish a foil-wrapped condom from inside, which he handed to her. Then he illustrated his priorities with his thumb and the first two fingers of his right hand. Mercy, not to be undone, took him in her grasp, as if it were a competition to see who could drive the other mad first. He hissed as she sheathed him with the condom and grabbed her hips as she lowered herself onto him, letting her set the rhythm. Hart fought to keep his eyes open as Mercy moved on top of him, watching him with equal heat as her glasses slid down her nose, and even that was sexy. His fingers curled hard into her flesh as Mercy slid her fingers between her legs and circled the mounting pressure of her exquisitely tight bud.
Is this okay?
She gasped.
Fuck yes, it's okay,
he half growled, half laughed, making a hysterical giggle bubble out of Mercy in reply. He bucked beneath her once, twice, and then Mercy's back arched in release. Hart held on for dear life as she rode out her pleasure. When he could take no more, he clamped his fingers on her hips as he thrust upward with a deep moan. Then he melted into the settee as if their coupling had removed his spine, and he gazed up at Mercy with glassy eyes.
So, can I take you to dinner?
Mercy's blouse was open and wrinkled, her brazier unclasped and dangling off her shoulders, and the gods knew where her overalls had ended up. Her glasses, smeared with a combination of her sweat and Hart's, sat crookedly on her nose, and her hair snaked out of her scarf in riotous curls.
Sure, let me grab my purse.
Hart clamped his lips against the laugh pushing its way up from his lungs. Mercy narrowed her eyes at him, and without warning, reached down and tickled his stomach. No one had tickled Hart in his adult life, and he had been unaware until this second that he was still very ticklish. He squealed with helpless laughter as Mercy's fingers accosted him without, well, mercy. Tears of hilarity were streaming down his cheeks by the time she relented, and when he looked up at her for an explanation, she said,
"Oh, good, you do have teeth."
The self-satisfied smirk on her face made his playful side, the one he'd thought long dead, roar to life. He grabbed her around the waist and tickled her until she was screeching like a peacock.
"Oh, good," he said. "You do have dimples."
Months ago, when Hart had slipped a letter into a Nimkillum box at the West Station, he had felt as though he had a bundle of knots coiled in his stomach. With each letter from his friend and with each passing minute in Mercy's presence, those knots loosened, little by little, as if she were picking them apart with her capable fingers. He hadn't realized how tight his lungs were until Mercy gave him room to breathe. Now, he sat across from her at a nice restaurant. It was the last time he'd had a sit-down meal somewhere other than a greasy spoon. Sipping a glass of red wine, it was the last time he'd had wine, as a fog of contentment covered him like a warm blanket. "Probably shouldn't have ordered this," he said as he sipped from his goblet and set it down on the white tablecloth. The wine tasted heavy and velvety on his tongue. It made him feel heavy and velvety too. Mercy snorted in disbelief. "I don't drink much," he told her. "How tall are you? 6'6", 6'7"?
6'9".
"Pretty sure you can handle one glass of wine."
"All I'm saying is that it's a good thing you're driving tonight. I don't think I could get us home safely."
He realized, too late, that he had uttered the words "us" and "home" in the same sentence, as if they belonged together. Worried, he studied her face, but she grinned at him, her face lit flatteringly by candlelight. Another knot inside Hart unraveled.
"I am growing very attached to the notion that Zeddy is going to apprentice here," Mercy said over her plate of sea skate braised in garlic butter, wine, and lemon juice with capers dotting the rich sauce. "If he wants to cook like this for me on a regular basis, who am I to argue?"
"So it's all settled?"
"Almost. Pop is going to hand the undertaking duties over to me, and my sister, Lillian, is going to take over my old office duties, which means we need to hire a new delivery driver. But then there's the matter of Cunningham's."
By the time she finished telling him about Cunningham's deal with Afton Lumber, Hart was ready to use Curtis Cunningham's head for target practice. The ID key around his neck weighed him down as he considered Mercy's options, which were few and far between. She waved her hand in front of his face.
"No, nope. Turn that frown upside down. We're not going to worry about that tonight. We are having fun, period."
Fun. When was the last time he had had fun? And then he remembered dancing with Mercy, and also having sex with Mercy, which was as fun as it was heartfelt. Heartfelt, he thought, unable to contain the inebriated giggle that popped out of his throat.
"You really are drunk after one glass of wine, aren't you?"
Mercy asked, clearly delighted by the irony.
"A teeny tiny bit."
Mercy bit her lip to contain her laughter at his expense. And because the wine had cast aside Hart's filter, he told her,
"When you bite your lip like that, it makes me want to bite your lip like that."
"Cute little drunk Hart."
"Cute little sober Mercy with her cute fucking dimples."
Over dessert and coffee, Mercy, and tea, Hart, they traded funny stories. Mercy made him laugh so hard that tears sprang from his eyes when she told him about the first time she heard a dead body groan as she'd helped their father load a boat into the old auto dock. She'd had no idea that a cadaver could make a sound, and it scared her so badly, she dropped her end of the boat, breaking open the stern so that the wrapped corpse within stepped on her toe. She then ran screaming all the way to the kitchenette, where she ate an entire package of store-bought cookies before her father came in to comfort her, at which point she got sick all over him. Hart told Mercy about the time he caught a pair of big game hunters who had come to Tarnia to shoot dragons. They refused to believe him when he informed them that dragons didn't exist, and the only reason he managed to convince them to turn back was because a possessed possum had climbed out of a Tarnian violet oak and chased them. They tried to shoot it with their rifles, only to discover the hard way that New Gods era technology didn't work within the borders of Tarnia. The toothy, furry drudge shambled after them all the way to the portal, and Hart followed behind, enjoying the show with smug satisfaction. He had never told that story to anyone before, mostly because he hadn't had anyone to tell it to, except maybe Alma and Diane, and he had stopped telling them much of anything. Sitting across from Mercy, laughing and tipsy and in love, he decided to visit them more often. Maybe he'd take a few vacation days here and there and give himself more time to be with the people he cared about. He had so many stories he'd never told anyone. Hart was still buzzed after he paid the exorbitant bill. On the way to eternity, he leaned his head against the window and watched Mercy drive. Unfamiliar emotions swirled inside him. Tranquility, hope, expectation. And with the wine soaking into his brain, he didn't try to fight them. This thing with Mercy had already progressed well beyond the bounds of his imagination. Who knew how far they could go together? For once, anticipating the future was a comforting thought. "Is it okay if I spend the night?" he asked before he sobered up enough to second-guess himself.
"Did you honestly think I'd use you for a nice dinner, then kick you to the curb?"
"I don't want to assume," he told her. "I don't want to push." She kept her eyes on the road, but she was smiling.
"Yes, I want you to spend the night."
"That's good, because I packed my toothbrush."
"I'd like to think you would pack your toothbrush no matter where you ended up."
"And deodorant. You are very special to me." She laughed, and he knew then that he would never tire of the sound. Once they reached Mercy's apartment, Hart put his toothbrush to work and his deodorant, too, to be on the safe side, after which he flopped onto the transcendent mattress and listened to the mundane sounds of Mercy getting ready for bed. With a stomach full of phenomenal food and the comforting routine of Mercy removing her eye makeup in the bathroom, a beautiful serenity encased him. His eyelids grew heavy, his breathing slowed. He could hear his own heart beating steadily in his chest. Mercy came into the bedroom and lay down beside him, snuggling into him.
"I wore you out, huh?" she said.
"Sorry." He was so relaxed that his lips barely moved.
"No need to be sorry. I'm one satisfied customer."
She brushed her nose against the skin of his neck, and he breathed a small laugh.
"What are you doing?" "I'm nuzzling you. You're very nuzzleable."
"It tickles."
"Good."
She patted the hollow curve of his right shoulder.
"This is my nuzzle nook now. Capital letters. Mercy's nuzzle nook."
He closed his eyes and inhaled the scent of her cold cream as she nestled her head into the real estate of his body she had claimed as hers, as if she didn't already own everything he was, body and soul.
"Works for me," he murmured.
And he pushed aside the niggling worry that he was going to have to tell her about the letters at some point.
Chapter 28. In a way, Mercy was glad that her letter-writing friend had gone silent. She wasn't sure what she would tell him about Hart, and how effortlessly he had integrated himself into her life, the way she had once imagined her pen pal might if they'd ever met. In the end, Lil was right. A tall, single, and extremely attractive Tanrian Marshall standing before her in the flesh was a million times better than a letter-writing stranger. However, the reason she was seeing Hart so often made her anything but glad. "Fun fact, you don't need an excuse to come see me, so don't feel like you have to keep putting yourself in harm's way," she told him, as she pried up the bandage on his shoulder. He and Penn had taken out 5 dredges near the Alvarez Ambrosia Bottling Company yesterday, and Hart had the wound to show for it. Now he sat on Mercy's bed in nothing but his boxers so that she could change out the dressing. "It's not usually this bad," he said, facing away from her since Mercy was kneeling on the mattress behind him. "I've gotten clobbered by more dredges in the past 3 months than in the past 3 years combined, and they're all keyless. I don't know what's going on."
"And my well is full to bursting. Again."
Mercy frowned at the angry red gash on his skin, which was healing faster than it ought to. She suspected that the next time she saw him,
It would be nothing more than a pink streak, if not gone entirely, like all the other scrapes and cuts she had patched up over the past few weeks. But since she knew that the prospect of immortality upset him, upset both of them, if she was being honest, she decided to finish bandaging the wound without comment. When she was finished, he turned and reached for her and pulled her onto his lap. "I'm half tempted to tie you to the bedpost so you can't go back," she told him.
"I'm half tempted to let you.
Bound to my bed in nothing but your underwear is probably not the best way to meet my father." Hart startled, as if Mercy had poured a bucket of cold water over his head.
"Is your father coming over here soon?"
"He's handing over some of his office duties to Lil this week. They'll both be downstairs around 8 o'clock. Hart looked at the alarm clock, which now read 7:42. "Fuck!" he cried. He nudged Mercy off his lap and scrambled for his clothes. "Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!" Mercy put on her floral silk robe as she watched Hart panic. Do you want to keep this a secret?"
"No, I..."
"Do you?" She hugged the robe more tightly around herself. "I don't like sneaking around, but my family is always up in my business, and Pop keeps harping on me about settling down. I'd hate to subject you to that, when everything between us is so..." Hart paused as he was shrugging into the sleeves of his shirt.
"So?"
"Perfect." It was a big word, right up there with commitment and love. She had reached so quickly for the L word with Nathan. Too quickly. Inaccurately. She was not yet ready to utter it in Hart's presence, although she was beginning to think it in the private recesses of her mind. She worried that her admission would scare him off. Instead, he rewarded her with his almost smile. Most men seem to take up so much room, and here he was, 6 feet, 9 inches tall, and the most unobtrusive person she'd ever met. "Perfect," he agreed, and the word love grew bigger and louder in her brain. He zipped up his pants before he threaded his fingers with hers.
"Your family is important to you, so if you want to tell them about us, go ahead. But if we are going to inform your dad that we're dating, I'd rather it be over a nice, wholesome dinner, not when I'm leaving your place first thing in the morning because I've spent the night worshiping at the altar of your glorious, beautiful, intoxicating pussy."
"Oh my," Mercy tittered, her cheeks heating.
"That came out more vulgar than I had intended." Mercy did not find it vulgar.
It was nice to be thought of as an altar, when every other man she dated had approached her with an attitude that suggested, "Meh, I guess you'll do." She let the flaps of her robe hang open and relished the appreciative huff that came out of Hart's mouth as she pulled him closer. "Say that again."
"A nice, wholesome dinner," he drawled seductively.
Mercy laughed as she took his hand and guided his fingertips over her underpants, pressing his fingers into her, moving them with the pressure and rhythm she wanted.
"Fuck," Hart moaned.
She relished the way she could render him helpless in 2 seconds. "We have..." She glanced over his shoulder at the clock as she slid his hand inside her underpants. 14 minutes. "I want you to worship at the altar of my glorious..."
"Oh, fuck,"
he whimpered, as his fingers went to work, doing exactly what she liked. "Beautiful, intoxicating..."
"If you say it, my soul is going to depart my body, I swear to the gods of death."
She unzipped his pants as her lips brushed his ear. "Pussy."
"Fuck, Mercy."
"That's the idea." By 7:57, Hart was saying, "Fuck, fuck, fuck," again as he struggled into his clothes. But this time, he was giggling like a sex-sated teenager, and Mercy was as bad, cracking up as she fastened on her brassiere. "When will I see you again?"
"Late Wisdom's Day. I might not be able to get here until 10 or later.
You can show up at 3 in the morning as far as I'm concerned." She took his face in her hands as soon as he had stepped into his boots. "Be careful."
"I always am."
"But now you need to be careful for me." He went still and quiet in her hands. His pale eyes softened, and the word love expanded and grew heavy in her stomach.
"I..."
he began. But he didn't finish whatever he was going to say. Instead, he pressed a kiss to her lips and promised,
Wisdom's Day, at the latest, before he tore down the stairs at 7:59, buttoning his shirt. Mercy followed close behind, tucking her blouse into her dungarees. They made it as far as the counter in the lobby when they heard the jingling of keys in the lock at the front door, and Pop's and Lillian's voices outside.
"Back door! Back door!"
Mercy whisper shouted, and they were both snickering again as Hart changed course.
"Merce! Zeddy made the cutest mini quiches! You've got to try one!"
Lil hollered from the lobby as Mercy and Hart made it to the dock. In their haste, they had left the apartment door open, and Leonard sprinted down the stairs, motivated by the prospect of dropped crumbs. His barking and antics covered the sound of Mercy letting Hart out the back door. She already missed him. And now she needed to face her sister, and her father, too. But whereas Pop was clueless, Lil was frighteningly observant, and Mercy felt as if she were wearing her two most recent orgasms on her face like bright pink lipstick. Until 5 minutes ago, she had believed that she did not like to be taken from behind. But then, Hart had bent her over the settee.
"Get your mind out of the gutter!"
she chastised herself as she made her way to the lobby, praying that Lil wouldn't notice Mercy's swollen lips.
"Good morning,"
she said brightly.
"Too brightly. Take it down a notch,"
she told herself. Pop kissed her cheek in greeting, but Lillian dispensed with the pleasantries. She nodded at the coat rack and asked, "Whose hat is that?" There was Hart's hat, left behind in his haste, the hat he had gripped for dear life the night their odd romance had taken off.
"A marshal must have left it by accident."
"Which is not a lie," Mercy added in her head.
"Did I hear someone on the dock? It's awfully early to drop off a body, isn't it?" "No worries, I handled it. Here, I'll take those."
Mercy relieved Pop of the platter of mini quiches and headed for the kitchenette. Pop went into the office, but Lillian followed Mercy, whose armpits went damp with alarm. Regardless of whether Lil was onto her or not, Mercy was ravenous, so she dug into a mini quiche without bothering with a plate or fork.
"These are amazing," she groaned. "Your shirt buttons are off," Lil informed her.
Sure enough, her collar was two buttons higher on the right than on the left.
"Oh, ha-ha,"
she laughed nervously as she brushed the crumbs off her boobs and got to work making herself presentable.
"Your hair's a mess. No scarf today?" her sister pressed as Mercy redid her buttons.
No. Lil leaned in, squinting at Mercy's face.
"Is that last night's mascara hanging out under your eyes? Allergies? Make my eyes run?"
Lillian's face glowed with evil glee.
"Whose hat is in the lobby, Mercy?"
She was caught, and she knew she was caught, and all she could do was flounder in the kitchenette like a landed fish. Lillian trotted to the lobby as fast as her pregnant belly would allow, and Mercy darted after her. Her sister grabbed Hart's hat off the rack and cried,
"I know this hat! I've seen this hat! Where have I seen this hat? Would you stop with the hat?"
Mercy shot a glance at Pop's office door as she tried and failed to retrieve the hat from Lillian. And then Hart walked past the front window, his long hand patting the top of his head as if he had realized at that exact moment that he had left his hat at Birdsall and Son.
"Oh my gods,"
Lillian uttered before she turned on Mercy, her evil glee growing more evil and gleeful by the second.
"Are you trying to tell me you got it on with Hart Ralston? I'm not trying to tell you anything. You're yanking it out of me with brute force. Holy three mothers, how many times?"
Mercy wavered, a denial on her tongue, but she knew it would do her no good now.
"How many times for him, or how many times for me? Because they're not the same, and I am definitely in the lead,"
Lillian screamed in her face. Pop poked his head out of the office.
"Everything okay out there?" "We're having girl talk, Pop," said Lillian.
Pop retreated post-haste to the office, probably assuming they were talking about periods or afterbirth. But to be on the safe side, Mercy ushered Lil to the kitchenette and shut the door.
"I thought Hart Ralston was persona non grata in Mercyland," Lillian said.
Mercy thought of the debacle at the Little Wren Cafe, when she had told Hart, "You hate me as much as I hate you." She was ashamed of herself for how she had behaved that night, now that she'd gotten to know him for who he truly was.
"Maybe I changed my mind," she told her sister.
"How long has this been going on?"
"Since the night of the Founders' Day party."
"That was nearly 3 months ago! You've been holding out on me all this time?"
Lillian smacked Mercy's arm.
"I'm sorry. I wanted to make sure it was an official thing before I told you about it. I haven't said anything about it to Pop yet, either. You know how he is about me getting married. I'll be as silent as a shipyard. But can I say one thing?"
"No."
"Too bad. You love Hart Ralston! Hart is your boyfriend! You want to have Hart's babies!"
That was when Zeddy, of all people, sauntered into the kitchenette. Zeddy, who almost never set foot in Birdsall and Son these days, yet here he was. When Lillian's taunt hit his ears, his jaw dropped.
"God's tits!
What?" he asked, but it was clear he needed no answer. Mercy propped her elbows on the counter and buried her face in her hands. Lil grabbed a butter knife out of the dish drainer and made a threatening gesture toward their brother.
"You tell Pop about this, and I cut you."
"Fine, but you can bet your ass I'm telling Penn. He is going to shit himself."
Lillian chucked the knife into the utensil drawer.
"Your boyfriend is going to shit himself? Sexy. Why are you here? Did you show up for the specific purpose of tormenting me?"
Mercy asked him.
"Penn and I were heading for the hotel to pick up Marshall Ralston, but he flagged us down on Main Street. Apparently, Hart, sexy times Ralston, wasn't at the hotel last night, was he?"
Zeddy cocked an eyebrow at his big sister as he swiped a quiche from the platter.
"Anyway, I stopped by to grab a snack."
Mercy beat her head against one of the cabinets. Her secret was out, and like toothpaste squeezed out of a tube, there was no putting it back. While Lillian wrested the books away from Pop in the office, Mercy got to work as the official undertaker of Birdsall & Son. They'd have to get around to changing the name of the family business soon, but in the meantime, Mercy had a well full of cadavers that needed tending. She decided to start with the keyless bodies that Hart and Penn had brought in the day before so that she could clear up space. As she brought the indigents out of the well and rolled them into the lift, she thought of Hart having to face drudges on a daily basis, a problem that was getting exponentially worse, based on her intake lately. The uptick was great for her bottom line, but it made her ill to think that she was making money off the problem. While Hart and Penn and all the other tannery and marshals risked their lives to keep people safe. She cleaned, salted, and wrapped two bodies, doing her best to focus on the incantations rather than let her concern for Hart consume her. As she dug the appendix out of the third body to make sure Hart and Duckers had sliced it, and they had, she noticed something odd. There was a strange ridge along the appendix, next to the wound. When she ran her scalpel underneath it, it peeled off, as if someone had stuck a paper-thin, flesh-colored patch to the small organ that housed the human soul. Beneath it was another hole gouged into the appendix, but there was no corresponding hole on the patch she had removed. Mercy went ahead and finished preparing the body, but she paid closer attention as she worked on the last two. It was much harder to see on the next, but she found a similar patch stuck over a wound on the appendix of the fourth body. And the fifth body produced the strange patch on both the appendix and the exterior abdomen. The latter matched the skin so well, she didn't think she would have caught it if she hadn't been searching for peculiarities. "What in the salt sea?" she wondered aloud.
Chapter 29.
Knock, knock, mail delivery.
Hart got out the whiskey and poured a healthy splash into a cup as Basarius stepped into the barracks.
"How you doing?"
The Nimkillum raised his cup to both marshals before gulping it down.
5 for Mr. Popular and 0 for the asshole.
Strange how the word asshole sounded like friend in the baritone register of a crass rabbit. Stranger still, how much Hart was starting to like the Nimkillum. Maybe because 0 for the asshole meant that Mercy preferred him to secret letter-writing him. It inspired a tip so generous that Basarius broke into a genuine smile,
his jagged tooth more childish than menacing for a change.
Guess I'm coming back tomorrow night, heartthrob.
For the kids' letters. Now get the fuck out of here.
That feels like a warm hug coming from the likes of you, you big softy. See you tomorrow.
As he watched the Nimkillum melt into the woods beyond the barracks door, Hart contemplated the once unfathomable notion that he really was turning into a big softy, a softy for whom Wisdom's Day could not arrive soon enough. As Duckers read his letters, Hart stretched out on his cot with his newest interlibrary loan. His mind kept drifting to Mercy until Duckers cut through his pleasant thoughts with a voice so smug it sent a portentous finger along Hart's spine.
Well, well, well.
Hart looked up from his book.
Well, 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 what? Fess up. I want to hear all about how I was right.
Hart tamped down a growing sense of vague foreboding. I've got nothing to fess up to. The foreboding went from vague to very specific when Duckers held up a letter scrawled in Zeddy's now familiar exuberant handwriting.
All I know is that one of us is hooking up with Mercy Birdsall, and it isn't me.
Hart's mouth went dry.
Zeddy knows? He overheard Mercy and Lillian talking about it. So it's true? Her sister knows?
Hart was having trouble breathing.
You clearly do not have sisters, because if you did, you would know that they tell each other everything. I mean, everything.
Lillian knew, and Zeddy knew, and now Duckers knew. And Roy Birdsall might know by now, too. And their knowing made the strange, beautiful, delicate thing between Hart and Mercy real and solid, something that could be broken. He and Mercy had talked about telling her family, but now that it had happened, Hart worried that it was too much too soon. What if they didn't approve of him? What if they didn't think he was good enough for her? He shoved his hair out of his face with both hands and squeezed the sides of his head, trying not to panic.
Fuck. Ha! I was right! Say it!
Duckers was on his feet, dancing in victory.
You were right, Hart said, feeling lightheaded.
Mean it!
Hart had the wild urge to laugh.
You were right, okay? About what exactly?
About Mercy.
I'm sorry, what about Mercy?
Duckers stood over him, leaning in, his hand at his ear.
I'm in love with her.
It was as if a burden had been lifted off his chest. The words he had almost said to her yesterday, freed from his heart and sent out into the universe.
Oh, shit, really?
Duckers' eyes bugged so hard, Hart thought they might pop from their sockets, and his brief euphoria vanished.
What the fuck did you think I was going to say?
Dang, sir, I don't know. I thought you were going to say that you like her, but you love her? Like capital L love?
I swear to the unknown god, you are a pox upon my soul, Duckers.
So that's a yes?
Hart thought of Mercy, beautifully disheveled after dancing with him, standing opposite him at the counter of Birdsall and Son, with two slices of cake and more than 4 years' worth of misunderstandings between them. He thought of the ease with which she swept the latter aside, simply by talking to him and drawing him out, bit by bit, as if the man he was on the inside was worth knowing. He tried so hard not to smile, he thought his face might break. Apparently, that was answer enough, because Duckers declared,
"Told you so."
Hart was grateful when Banneker and Ellis returned from their patrol, thereby cutting off Duckers' teasing. They hung their hats and sat down to dinner as Hart and Duckers headed for their equimaries in the stable. Unfortunately, Duckers turned out to be a dog with a bone when it came to Hart's love life.
So, like, you told Mercy about the letters that night at the cafe, right?
Hart rubbed his stubbly chin and said nothing.
Oh my gods, you didn't tell her.
This time, it was an accusation, not a question. You worry about you. Duckers flapped one elbow, performing a one-winged chicken dance with his left hand, while his lantern hung from the right.
Bark, bark, bark.
Fuck off.
You need to tell her, man.
Last time I checked, my name was Sir as far as you're concerned.
Fine. You need to tell her, sir.
And you need to shut your hole, kid. Duckers shook his head as Hart saddled his Equimaris.
I can't believe what a wimp you are. You slay the undead on a regular basis. Pretty sure you can handle telling that nice lady that you wrote her some love letters.
What do you know?
I know I'm going to tell her if you don't.
Hart went as cold as stone. I will fucking end your life.
No, you will fucking end your own life, miserable and alone, if you don't tell her. Now, like now.
If Hart was ice, Duckers was fire, grilling him with a truth he didn't want to hear but couldn't refute. I'll handle it, Hart relented.
You'll handle it?
Yes, I swear. Don't tell her, please. Duckers leveled him with an ocular skewering that rivaled Alma's.
I like Mercy. She's a good person. So you better handle it, sir.
Hart knew that Duckers was right. He needed to tell Mercy the truth, and soon, no matter what it cost him. The problem was, it might cost him everything.
The only people residing in Sector W7 were the employees of the Alvarez Ambrosia Bottling Company, who worked day shifts and barricaded themselves in their own barracks overnight. There were security guards on the grounds, but they were required by law to set off a flare to notify the Tanrian marshals in the event of a drudge attack, which was why alarm bells went off in one corner of Hart's mind when he and Duckers heard a commotion near the mist, more than a mile away from the Alvarez factory and storage cavern. Silently, Hart drew his pistol crossbow and motioned for Duckers to do the same. They rode toward the tumult to find a brawl in progress, and since it was difficult to discern people from drudges at night, they stayed on Equimaris back and went in for a closer look, lanterns blazing. Their light threw frenzied shadows against the uneven earth, and it took Hart a minute to distinguish five drudges from three living people, who appeared to be wearing the uniforms of Alvarez security guards. A pirated portal opened a hole in the mist some distance behind them, and bizarrely, there were heaps of what appeared to be sailcloth piled all over the place.
Have the flare ready for backup. I'm going in.
I'm going with you.
No, you stay here, and light the flare if things get ugly.
He didn't wait for an answer. He drew his machete and charged into the scene, chopping off the head of a figure he was absolutely certain was a reanimated corpse, then the arms of another drudge that was gripping a living man by his shirt. He hacked the head off one more of the undead with the machete, before returning it to the scabbard at his back, sliding off his mount and joining the melee on foot with his rapier drawn. He cut into the appendix of the armless drudge, followed by those of the headless corpses, as the living shot crossbow arrows at the remaining two drudges indiscriminately, which probably should have been a clue that something was more than usually wrong. But Hart was too preoccupied to consider it.
"Now, sir,"
yelled Duckers. But Hart's attention was on the living people, who were firing at will with no regard for his own well-being.
"Watch where you're shooting," barked Hart.
He took out the last two drudges by the light of the lanterns strapped to the arching poles on his and Duckers' Equimaris, as he barely avoided getting shot by the panicking humans. Once the five souls were dispatched into the night, and only the living remained standing, Hart got a better look at the woman and two men standing in front of the portal. They wore the security uniforms of the Alvarez Ambrosia Bottling Company, but Hart didn't recognize them, and the fact that at least one of them had nearly shot him led him to believe he was dealing with something far worse than drudges here. There were several crime rings that had their fingers in Tanria, and the Alvarez plant was a tempting target since it sat close to the mist. The trickster knew the mob had plenty of access to pirated portals to get in and out of Tanria. If these three were mafiosi, Hart wasn't feeling so great about the fact that they had crossbows drawn, while he only had his rapier in hand.
"Thanks, Marshal. We can take it from here," the woman said, making no move to holster her weapon.
Hart played along, sheathing his rapier, but keeping his hand near his pistol crossbow. I need to get your ID tag numbers for the report, he said coolly. No one moved or spoke. Tags, please, said Hart, his hand now on his sidearm. One of the men began to ease backward toward the portal. Fire the flare, Duckers, Hart ordered without taking his eyes off the three people whose lives he'd saved.
Sir?
Now!
Flare! He's got a flare!
Cried one of the men, raising his weapon and taking aim at Duckers. Hart drew his pistol crossbow and squeezed the trigger, catching the man in his thigh as the flare hissed, then exploded above them.
He fucking shot me!
The wounded man howled as he writhed on the ground.
Put down your weapons,
Hart shouted at the other two. But it was too late. The woman pulled her trigger, and a shaft tore through Hart's left side. He staggered, trying to remain upright despite the blinding pain, as the woman and the other man hauled their wounded comrade through the portal. They shut it down and pulled it off the mist as Hart fell to his knees, his left side shrieking in agony. Duckers hopped off his mount and sprinted to him.
I'm good,
Hart told him as Banneker and Ellis came galloping in. He pressed his hand to the hole in his side, trying to get a feel for how much blood he'd lost.
Sir?
Duckers crouched beside him.
See, there's more to fear from the living than from the dead. You remember